Mr. Roy Smith, Reel 4. Now, I know it's disjointed. It's how you remember it. And you say yourself it's a bit episodic. You know, that's how you remember
it. Probably had a sequence, some of it. Yes, it is.
Now, any other incidents that...
Well, then when we couldn't... We had to leave the trucks behind. There was a base. And we called it Mule Point. And everything that went forward had to go forward on mules. The tracks were just absolutely impassable. And then, of course, it started to get cold.
This is moving into winter now.
Yes, into the end of winter.
Now, what was it like that winter?
It was terrible.
In what way?
Could it be 40 degrees of frost?
I don't know how cold it gets in it, but it was very cold.
It was terrible. We couldn't dig holes for the our pioneer sergeant. Bomber Wells, he had a beard. He was the only man in a infantry regiment that's allowed to have a beard. And his job was burying the dead. And they couldn't even blow holes to bury them. They used, Amatol or Barrow. They used some sort of explosive to make the graves. And, it was terrible. And then, of course, wounded were frozen. And I remember seeing him jumping on men to get them below the ground, and breaking their arms and legs, and just to get them covered up. Oh, it was terrible.
Anything else about that winter?
Well, it was at that time that the medical sergeant, who was a nice chap, lost his nerve. Bomb happy, but he couldn't carry on.
So what are the symptoms of being bomb-hopped? How could you tell?
He started to cry. Because he handled everything that came forward. He was the initial man that let's see everything. And it was a terrible job. But he rallied, he got better of it. And at the end of the war, they did him a great disservice because my... release papers read military conduct exemplary, and his read military conduct fair. And I thought that was diabolical after what that man had done.
So he just temporarily lost his nerve a bit, or?
Yes. He couldn't take any more.
And he was just crying, was he? Did he refuse to do his duty or what?
Reduced to tears and shaking and saying how futile it all was. And
did he carry on doing his duty or did he stop?
I think they sent him back to, I think he was away about a fortnight, I think, but he came back in again.
Any other stories that just, you know, from that winter, because it was a bad winter, as you say?
It was terribly cold. And then there was the time in the snow when, it's in the book, when a local man, he farmed locally. I didn't know him then. He was with the artillery and we were stuck. And we couldn't go any further forward. And he came up to us in the snow and he crawled. He was an observation officer for shelling, you know. And he came up to us. He took a landline and dragged it behind him. He went forward hundreds of yards so he could see over the top where the enemy were. And he brought the barrage down on the troops that were holding us up. But he got the DSO for that. Jeff France, his name was. Jeff France, he farmed at Bickerton.
And you appreciated the efforts of these?
Oh, absolutely. Because we were absolutely pinned down, we couldn't move.
Anything else?
Well, at Fearsall, there again, you see...
Now, when was that? Do you know?
Well, I don't know.
Doesn't say that. Well, we'll look it up later. Tell me, now, what happened at Fearsall?
Well, it was a big, huge hill with a village on the top. And we were to take it. Well, we started to advance and we were under observation. They could see us the whole time. And so we withdrew. And we dug in down in the valley. And then... at Dartfall, we advance a party. There's a long, slanting road up into Fearsall, which they had covered with an 88. It was hopeless to go up there. So we went up the hill over the fields and the thing, and we dug in near the top, quite close to the thing in the in the darkness. And then in the morning there was the artillery. The artillery had caught up then, because often they were left behind, but the artillery had caught up with us, and they shelled the place for a couple of hours, and then we charged, and well, there wasn't much left when we got there. A lot of killed civilians, wounded civilians. Oh man, all for what?
And you've been back there recently, haven't you?
I went back this last year. It looks beautiful. It's all built up. And
now, anything else? That's Fear Soul. That's one that does stick in your mind. Was it because the civilians in particular? Or?
If you could, I could explain more. I've got a map marked where we were. Now you'd see then how. Can you?
Now we're just looking at them. Fear Soul was early days. Fear Soul's mm-hmm. just outside Florence, mm-hmm. And that was the first time. And then you go forward and you go up and back, and that's how you're in and out of the line. And
Borgo used to go back and forth through Borgo San Lorenzo. That, I think that was the name of the place.
That's right. That's and you were based out of there, and then moved forward from there north from there. So any other incidents you can pick out from this? I mean, it's an awful period of your life. I realise that, but any other stories?
Well, yes, there was one when we went forward in the snow, and I don't know. It varied. Sometimes a big mule train, and sometimes you had Sikhs as with the mules, and sometimes we had the Italian Alpinis. I think they called them Alpinis or something. But they were very different to the Sikhs. The minute we came under shell fire with the Sikhs, they just stood there as though they were bulletproof. But the Alpinis, they ran like rats the minute their shell fell. I mean, they different temperament altogether. The Sikhs were terrific men. I mean, you would think they were indestructible, and they didn't flinch.
But the Italians did.
Oh, they ran away. But this particular time we went up and it was snowing, and the quartermaster was with us that time. I don't know why he went forward, but the cube look went forward with us. And when we got to the far end, we'd lost the fellow, and we didn't know what had happened. There'd been one or two sporadic sort of shells, that's all. But as we went back, we found him lying in the snow, and he was nearly dead. He got us not badly injured, but he was nearly dead, and we took him back, and we built a great big fire in the open, because there's a lot of woodland there, and we put him in front of the fire to thaw him out, and all the screams that came out of that man as he came back to life again, it was terrible.
So he'd been lightly wounded, but he was freezing to death.
He was freezing to death, yes. But when as the circulation came, oh, the screams that came out of him, it was terrible.
And that was an officer, your quartermaster?
Quarter bloke, no.
The NCO?
NCO, not the captain quartermaster, no.
So the quartermaster sergeant? Anything else?
And then what was his name? Anyway, the same quartermaster, his brother was in the transport. And his brother was killed. I remember them. When we buried him, the padre, he was a great man, the padre. We went up to where when we buried him and left him. And the padre used to take a map reference of where they were buried. And Davis, his name was.
What were the burial services like? Or the burials?
Well, he did a proper little service.
Well, a proper religious service?
About 5 or 10, a religious sort of service, yes, he did. Not with all, I don't suppose, but I mean, the quartermaster sergeant, that's what he was, the company quartermaster sergeant. And his brother, I remember, very little fellow, he had to have pedals put onto his onto the controls of the truck that he drove. He was so small.
And so they'd take a map reference of the grave.
Yes, sir.
And what about the tags?
One tag was left with him, and then the party took the other one away. They actually put a little cross at his grave. I remember him doing it.
Now, what was it like on sentry duty? I mean, would you ever be on sentry duty with your brain gun?
Well, you were standing. Somebody was always awake. I mean, and you just took your turn with everybody else. But if anything went wrong, you just gazed out into the night. And if
what was it like? Because you've written a poem about it, I know. But I mean, what was it like for you on sentry duty?
Difficult.
In what way? What do you mean, staying
lonely,
awake?
Lonely, frightened. Seeing things that weren't there. And
did
but you had to have some sense of, you know, you had to get sleep sometime, I mean, so you had to just take it in turns sort of thing.
And would you have? Did anything ever happen while you were on sentry duty?
Hmm?
Did anything ever happen? Did you ever have to raise the alarm, or was it just routine mostly?
Well, no. If anything happened, it was usually an explosion of some sort. I mean, it.
So just somewhere on the battlefield.
Yes.
What about communication with home? I mean, did you get letters from home from your mum or your stepdad or your girlfriend?
Yes, periodically, but we were allowed one green letter a month.
What's a green letter?
Well, it wasn't censored by our own officers. All our other mail was censored by our own officers, but we were allowed one green envelope a month, which was censored by people that didn't know you.
Base officers.
Then we used to send little photocard things. Well, they're tiny little things. They used to photograph them and reduce them in size. I've got some upstairs, actually, just little.
And what would you write back about? I mean, would you tell your mum?
Just tell a lot of lies.
What do you mean?
Just tell them you were all right.
So you wouldn't tell them the truth about what was going on?
No, no, no.
You didn't want to upset them?
No.
And what would they write? Were letters from home important to you?
Yes, very. Especially from May.
But your girlfriend then, so you look forward to them?
Yes, very much.
And were any parcels ever?
Yes, I got some Three Nuns tobacco actually came through once. I used to smoke a pipe then.
Anything else in parcels?
No, that's about all. No.
And what about other rations? Did you get a cigarette or pipe ration?
Well, we got too many cigarettes. That's because of the trouble. We got a 50-tin free issue. No, whether that was weekly or monthly, I don't know.
It had to be cigarettes. You couldn't choose.
They were in a round, sealed around tins. Players always. And, of course, lots of people didn't smoke. So those that did smoked too much.
Yeah, did you smoke cigarettes as well?
I did then, yes. But then later on, on the desert, I had sandfly fever, and the MO, I went to the MO, and I didn't know what was the matter, and he looked me in the face, and he said, Smith, if you stop smoking today, you could live a year. I didn't smoke another cigarette.
And what about rum ration? Did you get a rum ration?
Yes, you had a rum ration.
How was that issued?
It depended, section by section. Quarter bloke used to break it down. It came in stone jars, and I forget how much he used to put water with it, because it was thick stuff. And we got a ration every day, which I used to save. I had a water bottle, and I used to put mine in my water bottle.
Were you allowed to do that?
No. And then when we came out of the line, I would drink the lot.
For a drink.
Go to sleep. And that was it. Sometimes quite a lot.
What would you do out of the line, generally?
Hmm?
Rest periods, what were they like?
What was?
Rest periods. Was that back to?
Well, getting changed and bathed. I mean, we mobile baths used to come up. Well,
what were they like, the mobile baths?
Well, they were out in the open. It was just a long run of watering can spouts down. And they didn't give a damn whether they were too hot or they were too cold. It didn't bother them. And we used to strip off, and I mean, in the snow, take everything off, leave it in the snow, go through the baths, and then at the far end, there's a great heap of clothes. You had to find something that fitted you, and it was all covered with typhus powder. Just shake it out before you put them on, and literally in the snow with the eye ties looking on.
Anything else about rest? Well, I mean, was it like?
But I mean, one of the sides of the warfare nobody touches upon is the fact that there was dysentery and people dirted themselves and you couldn't change.
Well, tell me about the dysentery. How bad was it?
Well, it was spasmodic, and you could have the backdoor trots for several days, and there's no more clothes.
Did you get it?
I did, yes.
It was bad.
No, I wasn't too bad, but
some did.
Yeah, a whole lot did. If you dirted yourself, well, there was nothing you could do.
Did you have toilet paper and things like that, or
not with us? No.
And what about the latrines? What were they like?
Well, the blacks used to dig most of the latrines. When we were back, the black fellas used to dig the latrines.
What were they like?
Just a pole and a hole.
Were they covered off at all, or
no,
was it
no,
just
no,
out
no,
in the
no,
open?
No.
Were things like lice a problem?
Hmm?
Were lice a problem?
Body lice? They were. We were typhus was the thing they were afraid of. And
now tell me about typhus.
We got sprayed periodically. They put a thing up your sleeves and under your armpits, but I didn't ever know of a case of typhus. They were very aware of what it could do, I think. Because the clothes were absolutely reeking with it the new clothes. Because you got a complete change of everything when you had a bath, which wasn't very often, but.
So it wasn't so much lice. We didn't get lice.
No, I can't say that we did, no.
Now, anything else about the fighting then? We had a bit of a break while we look at the conditions. What happened? What's the next thing you remember? In and out of the line, moving forward into the hills.
And then I was on the advance party when we got to Mount, oh, it began with a C, I can't pronounce it. We were looking down on Bologna from the hilltops.
Mount Castellero.
Something, that's what it was.
Do you remember the fighting on Mount Castellero?
Well, it got stable there, that they were throwing things at us and we were throwing things at them. And there was
there were
fighting patrols sent out and that sort of thing. And
now, what was a fighting patrol like?
Well, you just advance until somebody fired at you. Because they occupied nearly all the farm buildings and the villages, and the Spandau makes an awful noise when it's a very, very rapid rate of fire, much faster than the Bren it was.
Tell me about a patrol. What would a typical patrol be like?
Six or seven men peering forward to somewhere at night.
Armed with what?
But just your ordinary Tommy guns, and we had Tommy gunners, rifles, and the Bren gun.
So you'd be the Bren gunner?
I was the Bren gunner.
So you'd go out, and what was the procedure?
Just advance until you were fired upon.
So they were reconnaissance patrols?
Yes, yes, right. That sort of thing.
Not fighting patrols?
No.
And what were you looking for? Where the Germans were?
Just looking for Germans, that's it.
So, you got to this Mount Monte Castellaro, mm-hmm. And what happened then?
Well, then we were taken out of the line then in... We were in the line over the Christmas. And in the January, I was sent on a...
Do you remember anything about that period in the line at Christmas?
We got a plum pudding from the Queen. I remember that.
Were there any other Christmas celebrations?
No.
So what happened next?
Well, I went on a advance party to Palestine. We travelled by train all down to Taranto. And two of us were actually in with the driver all the way down. And he only had a very limited amount of coal, and it was just like dust. And I can see him yet shoveling this stuff in and saying, "Cattivo, cattivo." So cattivo must mean something bad, I don't know what. And we got to Taranto. Then by sea to Haifa.
Anything about that voyage?
No, it was smooth.
What was the situation in Haifa?
When we got there, not too bad. The Palestine police had most things under control. And then we had to pitch tent. I forget, Sarafand, was it? We had to pitch the tents for the whole battalion anyway, because we were all under canvas. And that was our job until they came.
So you'd gone over at what, in January?
Yes, it would be.
The main battalion arrived.
Followed afterwards.
At the back end of January.
Yes, yes, that's right.
45, of course. So what happened? Was it pretty hard work pitching the canvas?
It was very hard work, because I got tenosynovitis.
What's that?
They call it tennis elbow, do they not? It's a lack of synovial fluid in the sheaths, and it was from driving in posts.
Tent poles and posts. Mm-hmm. Did that last long?
Yes, and then as soon as the battalion came, we were sent on leave to Cairo.
What do you remember about that? What, the whole advance part?
No, as soon as the battalion joined us, we went section by section. And I was in the first lot. We went to Cairo for 2 or 3 weeks, I think.
What was that?
It was good. I went to the museum, they saw Tutankhamun and all that. And went out to then Cairo. It was a mile of clear desert before you got to the Sphinx. And there was a single railway, a single tram line went out. You went out by tram to the Sphinx, who then was in very sad condition because they'd got sandbags under his chin because they thought he was going to fall off. But I've seen pictures recently and he looks brand new, so they've done a good job on him. And it was there I got wrong off the padre because he was with us and I liked him, but I kicked a piece off one of the pyramids, put it in my pocket. Well, it's in that case there now. And he... Smith, he said, "Do you know what would happen if everybody kicked a piece off one of the pyramids?" Oh, dear.
So what happened when you got back to Sarafan, I think, what did you say?
Yes, we got back there, and then we had to patrol from Haifa through to Transjordan, would it be? Where we used to meet these Transjordan forces on their camels and what have you. This was the pipeline, because then the Stern Gang had just come into being, and they were blowing this thing up.
Now, tell me what those patrols were like. What do you remember of a typical one?
Well, we were in Bren Gun carriers, I think we were. They were semi-armoured vehicles we had. I think they were Bren Gun carriers, and we just had to go from village to village, and we got to know the Arabs in these villages. They were very good. Very honest. And we would go and meet up with these Arab boys, and then we would come back again. And
did anything ever happen?
Yes, it got blown up a number of times. And then we were in Tel Aviv. One incident, when we were on the pipeline, we were just coming back, and we saw this boy, about 16, wandering, and he looked... Well, we went to him, and what was the matter? And, of course, we had an interpreter with us, and he said what was the matter, and he had a broken wrist. And they'd put a camel dung and something else plaster on it. And of course, his fingers were going green. And I said, "He's not going to live." And they said, "No, well, what will we do?" I said, "Oh, we'll take him back to to what's name. So we took him back with us and handed him into the doctors, who they took him over. But on battalion orders the next morning, or well, a couple of days after, the indiscriminate picking up of Arab personnel will cease forthwith. But about 3 weeks, the RSM came. I mustn't swear on this thing. And he said, you brought the bugger in, you take him back. So we took him back to his village. And the Mukta man, I said to the interpreter, ask him, why did they leave him? And of course, he spoke to the Mukta, the head man of the village, and he said, if Allah wishes he will get well, he will get well. If Allah wishes he will die, he will die. And that was the attitude.
Now, you went into Syria for training.
Yes.
For a bit. Do you remember that at all? Because that's where the V-Day was. But I mean.
Yeah, we were in Beirut on D-Day. Actually in Beirut.
V-Day, not D-Day, V-Day.
Victory in Europe Day, yeah, that's
no,
it, yes.
Not
yeah.
That's
no, well, somebody had some distress rockets, which we used on the pipeline if, you know, we had a sequence of colours, and somebody let off a few of those, but that's all that happened.
So, not much?
No.
How did you feel about it, the war being over? Well, the war in Europe being over, yourself?
Thrilled a bit.
So, you're pleased when it started, pleased when it finished.
Mm-hmm. And, well, soon after that, of course, the release came.
What, your release?
Mm-hmm. I was group 25, which before that.
Now,
but in Palestine, I mean, it was.
When did you leave Palestine? There's a lot of sabotage starts.
Yes, there was, and then the.
Were you still out there then?
Yes, I was there when we were reinforced with the 6th Airborne, who had taken a battering at D-Day, I think. They were reformed and attached to us. And you see, then all these ships, we were in Tel Aviv, and all these ships came on the horizon, and they all just anchored just off there. And we were sent down with fixed bayonets to stop these people coming ashore. Well, it was ridiculous.
And of course, Jewish.
Jew, yeah, they came with black, all colours under the rainbow, and thousands of them became wading ashore, carrying their bundles, and we were supposed to stop them, which our CO said was ridiculous. But there we were, standing with fixed bayonets. Mad.
So you moved from Sarafan to Tel Aviv, would that be right?
Well, we moved about a lot, you see, this is the point, but we were in Tel Aviv and Haifa. Now I was, it was at that time, we were on the desert, on the patrol thing, and I was ill.
Is this when you got sandpiped?
Yes, and then I couldn't move my neck. And I went to our own medical man, and he sent me to brigade. Went to brigade, which was a tented hospital. They sent me to division, which was another tented hospital. And then they took me over the desert to Haifa.
What were the symptoms of
sandpiper? Well, like flu. But that, you see, the point was that wasn't the only thing that was the matter. Well, when we got to division, this doctor chap came in and looked me over and what was wrong. And he said, "Have you anybody in your family have died of anything peculiar?" I said, "Well, I had an older brother died with Hodgkin's disease, which is cancer of the lymph glands, you see." Oh, and off he went. He came back a few minutes later with a great big book, and he sat on my bed and read that through and through and through, and he still shook his head. And so they would send me to civilian. Well, I don't know if it would be civilian. It was a proper hospital anyway, in a building. And a little Jewish man came and examined me, and he looked in my throat and, "I think you have mumps, sonny," he said. And that's what it was, mumps.
So it's sample fever and mumps.
And mumps, you see. And of course, I was in an isolation room in this hospital, and this big fat old matron came tumbling in between 12 and 1 in the morning. with a book. "Oh, sonny," she says, "what is your next of kin? I must know your next of kin." I thought, oh, this is it. But I recovered.